get the special time. And, Madam Clerk, would you call the order? Call the roll.
I will. Warren Keough, District 1.
Present.
Phil Woods, District 2.
Here.
Ronald Arvin, District 3 is expected. Mark Ewing, District 4.
Here.
Cindy Bettini, District 5 is expected. Jim Colbert, District 6.
Here.
And Vern Halter, District 7 may be in and out via teleconference tonight, Mr. Mayor, but you do have a quorum.
Okay. Here we have before us the agenda. We have had a request to move item B under unfinished business to the last. If there's no objection, we'll do that.
It'll be after the public hearing.
That's after the public hearing, yes.
Okay. If I could speak to that, Mr. Mayor?
You may.
Ms. Bettini called me. Some of her mom's not well, and she had to go back home, and then she's on her way. So she called and asked that at agenda setting we do this.
Mm-hmm. I'm doing it at her request. There has been objection, so is there anything to vote on? Right, but there was no motion. I just raised this as a...
Somebody objects. If somebody objects, there would be needs to be a vote.
There needs to be a motion.
Mark, you still object?
Yes, I do. I object.
Okay. Assemblymember Culver, would you make a motion, please?
I make a motion to move item B to after the public hearing.
Okay. There has been objection. If there's no further discussion.
Just a question, the mayor to the clerk. Do we need a majority of four to... And I would ask for a short recess until, as my understanding, Senator Member Arvin's in the building upstairs. Will he be with us momentarily?
He should be.
Mr. Mayor, if I can, it does take, at the setting of the agenda, it does take four members to make any changes to the agenda.
Later in the agenda, it takes...
Take five.
I'm going to check the recess. You're already late.
Are you objecting from Florida? I'm sorry. I shouldn't try to be funny. Okay. We're in the process. We now have the presence of Assemblymember Bettini at 6:11 and Assemblymember Arvin. There's a motion on the floor to postpone. We're setting the agenda, and Assemblymember Bettini requested that item B under unfinished business go after the public hearing. And there was objection, so Assemblymember Culver moved, and the motion on the floor is to move item B to the after the public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still desire that, Assemblymember Bettini?
Is Vern coming in?
Maybe calling in and being in and out.
Yeah, okay. I'd like to have him here.
Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been objection. Is there further discussion on the agenda change? Being and hearing none, please vote.
Assemblymember Ewing.
No.
Mr. Mayor, it passed with Assemblymember Ewing and Arvin opposed.
Okay. Any further discussion on the agenda? Any objection? Being and hearing none, we have our... orders for the day. That's right. I'm going to ask Mr. Culligan to lead the pledge.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, unfinished business. Madam Clerk, would you read 11-092?
Order proposal number 12-005 to USKH Incorporated in the contract amount not to exceed $200,000 for the Manuscasitna Borough School District Administration Building roof replacement.
Okay. This is unfinished business, so it's already on the floor. Is there any update, Mr. Manager, on this?
No, sir, I'm not prepared for any updates.
Okay. Is there a discussion? Assemblymember Colbert.
Mr. Mayor, the reason that I asked to punt this before because we were given two sheets of paper, and in fact, I've even got some calls on it. It seemed like a lot of money for a roof design and didn't have any backup, like scope work and budget, you know, how many hours of architect, how many hours. And when then I went, so we punted it today, and I was in project management, and one of the project managers said, hey, what did you do there? I said, well, we didn't have any information. And he said, well, we gave all that to purchasing. And so he printed it out for me, and he said, what it is initially an assessment. Go out there and look at the roof, see what kind of design issues it has. And that was printed out, that cost estimate with all the hours for that assessment that was $25,000. And I said, well, what's the $200,000 for? And the response was, well, you know, we just figured 10% of construction and we just throw in a budget. And that's how we do design contracts now. And so and the, what the proposal said that they gave me, and I think you may have had a copy of that as well, but it said then after they do the assessment, then the architects would develop the scope of work and budget for the next thing. And the issue I have with the process is that we are basically writing a blank check for the scope of work, which is undefined. And so, you know, there's a, we got two proposals and we get a point score and we got an informational memorandum. That's all we got. We don't have any backup. Well, we're not here to approve a budget. We're here to approve the project, the work. And so we're going to need to sit down and have a work session and figure out, you know, this appears to me to be some kind of bit of an end run around to folks that are supposed to be responsible for the public purse, us, to just plug in a number and then get approval. So I have issues with that because I think it's, you know, we're not actually looking at a budget for the specific task so that we could rationalize it whether we thought it was good value or not good value. And also the public has a right to know that stuff. So, I think we should approve this, but I think we gotta kind of clean up some things here. And we see this again when we approve a construction contract with the built-in contingencies for, you know, up to 10% change orders or whatever, so it never would come back to us as a body. So, you know, these are practices that obviously have picked up in the last few years subsequent to rewarming this chair, but I just don't think it's the way we do business is just to cut a blank check and then, you know, not know what we're getting for it.
Spend the month and 25,000?
No, well, I mean, I think with the minimum we need to have a report back on this contract, what the design fee is actually going to be once that proposal's in, and I think we need you to tighten up the ship and start, you know, and these two-page memorandums need to be fleshed out with the scope and budget, in my opinion. Now, maybe others will weigh in with their experience, but it's hard to do oversight job without having any very little information.
I guess we're putting a lot of faith in the administration to make sure we're getting our bang for our buck. Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. So as the body may remember, we have had substantive discussions about the procurement office and what the procurement office is effectively plowing through a design build by edict from prior assembly as the best way to procure services as opposed to hard dollars. We've heard that from the attorney, that it was recommended by former assemblies that design build is a better way to go in somebody else's opinion. That's one thing. But the other problem is, and I worry that it's not a problem we can fix, because when you talk about engineering services, A&E services, it's a point score based on the proposal. And the cost is not viewed during that initial phase of the proposal review. So oftentimes you get procurement departments around the country, around the state, around the borough, that have, and I say this, you know, guardedly, that have a predisposition or a favored contractor that they've worked with, they've had a good experience with, and they look forward to working with them again because the process unrolled, it wasn't controversial, and so when the point system is deployed, those that are scoring are, again, predisposed to remembering that they had a good relationship with XYZ contractor. And I'm not saying this with respect to the A&E in this particular procurement, but just in general. So inevitably what happens, you get the return A&E firm because the procurement officer and certain individuals are used to working with them. So naturally, one could conclude they'll score better in the first step, and then cost is irrelevant. And the public ends up paying a lot of money without even knowing what the costs were proposed. That's the system that's at hand. Unfortunately, it's federal and state law that dictates that's how the procurement on A&E services is done. So can we fix it? I don't think so. I don't think we can. That procurement process is etched in federal and state law, where you review and you give points to the A&E without looking at the cost. The cost is opened afterwards. So just a little bit of history on why this is so problematic. I've looked into it. I'm still plowing through the procurement code, and I'm going to have some changes coming forth at a date future. But on A&E services, it's very convoluted, and it's something that is we're effectively shut out on considering price.
Assemblymember Bettini.
Thank you. I'm not sure, but I'm reading the informational memorandum, and it says that the amount cannot be reached for phase two within the original $200,000. The Borough Service reserves the right to close this contract. So on this particular one, is that an issue? I'm not so sure that is such an issue.
Mr. Manager,
we don't anticipate that being a problem. However, if it is, we will come back to the assembly. So if you award not to exceed $200,000, it will not be $210,000 or $250,000. It'll come back to the assembly. We don't anticipate that on a specific case.
So if I may follow up, based on what Vaughn said, are you saying that if we are doing design build, my understanding that you would say, you know, we want to design build this for X dollars, and then the proposal is bringing forward their design that can be accomplished and partnering up with a contractor that says, yes, I can do that design for this amount of money. So that's what sold me on the design build idea,
because it isn't the builders going saying, I'm sorry, the architect did this wrong in coming back for the additional design or cost overrun, or the architect, you know, it makes the architect and the builder a team rather than them blaming cost overruns on each other. But I don't know if that's appropriate with this particular one, that what we have before us, it just, if we say that the two responses, the two proposals are over $200,000, throw them all out and start over, I guess we can review the proposal. Is that what you're looking for?
Assembly Member Arvin.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So, you just summed it up, Mr. King. When you do a conventional design, produce 100% IFC, you know, issued for construction drawings, they go out to bid, then you have this conundrum between the builder, the contractor, and the design firm, and if there's any conflicts between the design and the contractor couldn't pick those up while bidding the project, then the contractor comes back to the owner, the borough, and says, hey, I need additional money because the A&E left this particular drawing out or this detail out. What I don't think the borough has been successful at over the past several years, and why the prior assembly kind of said, let's not, you know, just as policy, let's go to design build, is because there wasn't will in this building to put that on the designer. Not the owner. It's the designer. The designer has error and omission insurance, and when they leave something out, the owner, the borough, should take that fight up with the designer and not leave the builder to fight with the borough. But that is something that needs to be done from Mr. Moosey's office. And so, in order to avoid that, it was, I think, easy to say, well, let's just design build everything. But at the end of the day, history shows that if you have a hard dollar project, the owner saves money. Design build is expensive. If that answers.
Assemblymember Bettini?
Well, you know, I had a little bit of training back in 2005 when we were making these decisions on that, and what I got out of that training was, while up front design build is more expensive, that you often get a better product because the architect and the contractors are working together to do the design build, and that in a bigger project, probably not this rough, that you may get design build proposals from several architect contractors, and that you can then, it is written so that you can take the best of all of them, and that, let's say there were three, that each get, you know, a small stipend for their work, and that you own then all their plans. And of course, this was the bigger project that, and I think with what we're looking at right now in like school construction and things like that coming up, that I think that the next assembly really does need to have the training and make a decision whether we're going to go out to bid like that, because it made a lot of sense to me and the previous assembly, as you say. But when it comes in, the contract needs to be as such that the builder and the architect on this kind of thing, that they have to agree to that. I mean, the architect has to, like you said, stand behind his work. But I'd like to hear from the attorney, because I know, did he leave? He knew that was coming. I think that we've had some design builder friction here and lawsuits that ended up costing an awful lot of money too, because the builder wasn't willing to do it the way the architect said. So I think that the decision was made coming off of that kind of a bad lawsuit that the borough did not make out well on.
You want to ask Mr. Stropolis?
That's okay.
Who?
Remember, I'm the one that's never here on time.
We really need to rein in. We've got a lot of work to do tonight, and we're really not speaking to the core of the motion unless you intend to change something. I haven't heard anybody speak actually against the motion. Assemblymember Cole.
I will vote against the next design contract that comes here with blank check.
That's
mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's.
I'm not going to stop this. This is held for a point. I agree with Ron that hard dollar is, they can't be gamed, and I think that is what his point is. We have one bad experience as a design build here, and that's the Connick or the Goose Bay Elementary School, which was a hasty project, wanted to get it done quickly. And they're having issues with the concrete, the flat roof. And I think the problem is that the plans weren't put out, in other words, all the floor plan and all the components in detail of what they expected in that building. And if we did another project like that, I think you've got to have it very well fleshed out of exactly what you want and let them finish it out. You know, like perhaps like we did the building, we knew what we were getting with that floor plan, let them go ahead and design the structural. But we got to get it figured out, Mayor, before we get these school bonds rolling through here. And I'd like to see us have a goal that we want to spread the work around. We want to employ the trades and the professionals in this community. That money's plowed right back in. And I think that should be one of our overriding things, and an objective selection team. If it has to be codified on who's on that team, so that, you know, we aren't just getting the same firm getting all the work. But you're right, another day, another discussion. But we'll probably need to put that on our calendar that we have, because we have these multi-million dollar, hundreds of millions of dollars of work looking at, you know, we'll need to get the work on this process. And Noel and Ron have a lot of experience in this area, so, you know, we'll be looking to their experience to try to help us through this.
Manager, could you see that we get a workshop set up so we don't turn this into a workshop?
I agree this is a change in our bidding philosophy, and we need clear direction. But also, too, we met with the schools yesterday and today on this project, so I'm suggesting something, and I apologize. But what about November 29th for a work session?
Bring it up under comments. Okay. Motion on the floor. Further discussion? Objection. Hearing none, it passes. Resolution 11-027, Madam Clerk.
A resolution allocating grant funds and authorizing the manager to enter into a grant agreement with Valley Mover for the provision of commuter transit services.
Okay. Assemblymember Bettini.
I move resolution serial number 11-127, and I appreciate that staff wrote an excellent forward on this. I think the most important part of it to me is that when our human service grants were rated by the committee, that Valley Mover rated 90 points, which would have normally been a shoe-in for them to get the 30-plus thousand. I can't remember right now exactly what they requested. But because the state's regulation specifically said that it could not be for commuter, they did not get their grant. And so afterwards, I checked to see that the amount of money that the Borough Assembly had funded for the match, the difference was the $15,600. And so this is just an out-and-out grant of money that was set aside by the Assembly last May during the budget time. And I think that this nonprofit group is relatively new. They are providing service in a very fast-growing area for commuters to Anchorage, and I do believe that it is helping our economy through this. So I would ask for your unanimous support.
Member Keel?
Well, I'm going to support this, but after I take a couple minutes ramble, I'd like to make an amendment. And Assembly Member Patini is correct. Valley Movers did apply for the full amount of the match fund, and they were one of 24 applicants, 20 of which were apportioned certain monies ranging from $32,000 down to $5,000 or $6,000. Valley Movers was one of four that received zero funds in this instance because they fell outside of the parameters of the grant. So transportation-related services are defined by the state in some instances, and this instance does not qualify for the grant. What I did a little bit yesterday and today is I checked with other public transit and mass transit entities in the borough. And let me back up and say I'm a big supporter of public transportation and mass transit. But there are Valley Movers works loosely but cooperatively with other two public transportation providers. And they are the Massachusetts Community Transit, MassDOT, and the Chicklin Area Transit System called CATS. And I had a photocopy or a copy made of a newsletter from each of these entities or an information flyer along with the Valley Mover newsletter that they provided us as well. So when I spoke to representatives from both of these other public transportation entities, and each of them said they looked at applying for grants through this match, and the way they read it, they didn't bother to apply because they perceived that they would not be receiving funds because they didn't fit within the guidelines of the grant. So what we have here now is that Valley Movers, you know, a worthy entity, public transportation has approached us and asked for funds in the amount of $15,600 plus the leftover monies of the fund balance from this human services account. But if we give it to them in that full amount, what happens is, for instance, the only other transit entity, which is called Sunshine Community Health Center, doing business as Sunshine Traffic Coalition up to Susitna Valley, we wind up giving Valley Movers a greater amount of money than we provided to Sunshine Transit Coalition. It did fall into the parameters of how these awards were granted. So I think it's somehow would be less than equitable if we give more money to a public transit entity. We didn't fit within the parameters, but we're using leftover funds from the same account to fund them. So I think I have a little bit of a problem with that. Again, as worthy as Valley Movers is as a good entity. So with that in mind, and as well as the fact that these other two sister or related transportation entities didn't bother to apply, I suggest, and I'll make a motion, that we if we're going to use these funds, which aren't intended for public transportation, if we're going to use that we divvy them up amongst the three entities. And I've spoken to these folks, and they MassDOT and CATS, and they would accept those money. So I am going to move that we amend resolution serial number 11-127 to change the scope of work in the amounts of Valley Mover, an award of $7,639, MassDOT $5,000, and CATS $3,000, for the total amount of $15,639.
Okay, there's a motion on the floor. Assemblymember Bettini.
Mr. Keel, I wish you would have called me on this ahead of time so I could have done that type of research. I am not going to support your motion because I think that this is it was brought up at the last meeting that I was probably going to do this, and I think that the rest of the money you could probably find that in some other area. I know that we have frequently, at least a couple of times, given mascot money outside of this grant program. We have given a lot of money to the van ride program and so on and so forth. This is a very large service that has come forward all with private funding. And these others have come forward with grant funding before. And you may recall that one of the things that was so important to this is that they needed to show local support. So I will be voting against this amendment of yours.
Assembly Member Ewing?
The Chair, Deputy President McKinney, Ewing. Mr. Keel, if you lived in a core area, you would see the amount of people that the valuables are transporting to and from Anchorage every day. They do not have black tinted windows like mascots. We have 20 passenger buses with one person. I applaud them. And I believe I've watched them grow because I do live in the core area. And I think that they deserve this money. And the amount of people, the ridership, has increased dramatically over the last year. Thank you.
Hey, Assemblymember Culver.
I have a lot of constituents that commute, and they like this service, and you know, I think the intent here was to show our support, and if we dilute that support, it's not as $5,000 is a lot less than $15,000 to obtain matching funds. I think the intent was here to try to show our support so that they can stay in business and provide that service. You know, with this amount of money, you can't take care of everybody's transportation needs at all, you know. And so I came here focused on this issue. I'm not ready to deal with the other grantees. I don't know. You know, I know we've put a lot of cash in the mascot and been very supportive. And some of these other entities already have grant sources. But as far as I know, this Valley Mover pretty much is a startup business at this point on private cash. And they're trying to get into grant money, and I think we want to see them survive. So I think that I'm going to stick with the original intent of the resolution.
Okay. Assemblymember Keel.
Well, in response to Assemblymember comments by Assemblymember Keeney and Colbert, first of all, my notes from the preceding meeting when we addressed this is I acknowledge the Valley Movers is a relatively new startup, but my notes suggest that they received an initial grant of $339,000 when they first started up 19 months ago, just a little over a year and a half ago. So that's what I have in my notes. I don't know how correct that is, but that's what I have. So that indicates to me it's not strictly private money. Second of all, I really have a problem with the fact that we'll be awarding more money to Valley Movers than we do Sunset Transit. I mean, how do we explain to them that we've done a fair and good and equitable job of funding public transit, and we're giving money to one entity out of a pot intended for one use, and we're using that money for some other use, and one of the entities that fit the criteria for receiving this money will be receiving $10,000 instead of the $15,000 we had intended for Valley Movers. And I think it's less than equitable, too, to the other two public transit entities
MassDOT has been around for a while, and indeed they have received money from the Bureau. CAST is the newer startup with a small ridership, and so that was my thought was to just took a stab at apportioning this small amount of money, relatively small amount of money, equitably, some way that I imagined equitable amongst the other entities that didn't bother to transport or didn't bother to apply for these grants. When they looked at the criteria and said, well, this doesn't fit, so why bother to apply? So I think there's something fundamentally out of kilter here, just from my perspective.
Mr. Mayor?
Assemblymember Bettini is next, then Assemblymember Woods, and then Assemblymember Ewing.
Again, I'm really sorry that you didn't contact me ahead of time as the sponsor so that I could have my notes and everything that we had at the previous meeting in front of me. But it's my recollection that the $300,000+ was a grant that they needed this match in order to get, and that it isn't a grant that they had already received. But again, we're all just working on recollection here, and I hesitate to say what I'm about to say, but I'm going to anyway. As I've sat here for 6 years, equally, the amount of money that goes to these outlying areas is substantial compared to the revenue that comes in. And I always support the outlying areas. But this is a needed transportation for people that are in small, little, borough, 1 acre or less lots. They're eking out a living, commuting to not that great a job in Anchorage, and they're core area dwellers that really cannot live off the land like some of the outlying areas and the way, you know, my family did in the 30s and 40s. So I just feel like it's two different issues here, and I'm supporting this because it is a core area kind of thing. And transportation in an area up KGB that literally has no borough services other than fire, which they get to pay a pretty hefty extra borough tax for.
Assembly Member Woods.
Yes, I'm going to vote against the motion because I see no reference to ridership, and I think that's very important, something that we really should bring up next time this comes up, and let it go.
Okay. Assembly Member Ewing.
Yeah, in lieu of stopping the filibuster, I'm going to call the question.
Okay. Is there objection? I don't hear objection, so we vote on the amendment, which splits money three ways.
Would you reset me, please?
Please vote.
Assemblymember Ewing.
No.
Mr. Mayor, the motion fails with Assemblymember Keough in support.
Okay. So, we're back to the main motion. Is there further discussion? Assemblymember Keough has his hand up, and then Assemblymember Ewing.
Thank you. And I would say that I've received a couple of phone calls and a couple of emails from folks who use Valley Movers, I have no doubt of the value of this service to them. But again, this is one of three or maybe four entities that provide public transportation in the borough. One from the Mat Valley and the Glen Highway part of the borough to the core area. MassDOT, which provides the core area and a little bit up the other way. Sunset Transportation, further up the Parks Highway in the Susitna Valley. And Valley Mover, who does the run from Palmer Wasilla to Anchorage. So, but I think they're all important. My point is not to diminish the significance of Valley Mover, but it's, again, it's a matter of equity and how we apportion dollars. And I think this sends the wrong message. So
we're rewarding an entity, a worthy entity, with funds out of a pot intended for some other use, and I'm okay with that. We've done that before. But again, I would like someone to explain to Sunset Transit how it is or why it is that Valley Movers is getting more money out of a pot where they didn't meet the criteria for than Sunset Transit did for a while. So I guess I'm finished with my long-winded comments. Thank you.
Member Ewing. Assemblymember Ewing, you wanted to speak?
Yes, sir. In lieu of long-winded comments, I would like to call a question.
Okay, is there objection? I don't hear any objections, so please vote on the primary motion.
Assemblymember Ewing.
Of course.
Passing unanimously, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Next is the public hearing. And this is Madam Clerk, please read 11-022 into the record.
An ordinance repealing MSB 2.70 Code of Ethics and adopting MSB 2.71 Code of Ethics.
Okay, we'll get the sign-in sheet. There's nobody signed up, so we will open the public hearing and give opportunity for anyone present to speak. Please come forward.
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Manager, Ms. Clerk, Assembly Members, my name is Patricia Rosnell. My comments concern the current version of Ordinance 11-022 regarding MSB 2.71 Code of Ethics, which I would ask the Assembly not to approve today for these reasons. It lacks a definition of conflict of interest, a major component of ethics in the public sector. It lacks meaning in the laundry list of personal interest, supposedly the definition, on which considerable time was spent at the last assembly discussion, with good reason, since as it stands, this list is no definition. The cobbling together of the ethics board's draft with multiple assembly edits has produced inconsistencies in the content and format that might go so far as to render this valuable piece of legislation useless in application. Guidance that cannot be understood or can be readily misunderstood supplies a dangerous semblance of propriety and decorum while effectively leading us toward the dark side of autocracy. Not that it worked for me, but an analysis by an online readability test suggested a need for a college degree to understand this on a first reading. It took me more than once, and I totally failed in a few places. As a code to live by, it has too many details, like obstacles that can be easily avoided and too few standards to adhere to. In a separate paper to the Assembly, I have suggested language for amending the most outstanding of my issues, but I believe there are serious issues with the document as a whole. That it be clear, concise, cohesive, and comprehensive, that it provides for disclosure and transparency, and that it provides effective administration. I would ask the Assembly if it is more critical to pass legislation at this time or if they want a document that can stand the test of time and trials. This is not rocket science. It's been done, it's being done all over the country and, in fact, all over the world. A return to the drawing board now, looking at some of these other examples, may save considerable borough administrative time and residence tax money in dealing with problems raised by incomplete, inconsistent, ineffective, or too hastily approved legislation. Thank you.
Talk about time. Thank you. Assemblymember Arvin, did you set her up?
No.
Oh. It's so ironic. It's just about... We've had a discussion before the meeting started, and she gets a number of same points that Assemblymember Arvin mentioned.
Okay.
I'm just making sure there wasn't collusion here. Is there anybody else that wants to speak?
Yeah, what's the definition of that?
Yeah, we need that.
Evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the Assembly, Madam Clerk. My name is Jim Sykes. I'm the penultimate chair of the Ethics Board, and I've spoken to you a number of times on this regarding the rewrite. I'm glad that the previous speaker came forward with some concerns, because obviously we didn't consider everything before we sent it to the Assembly, even though we spent a lot of time on it. But I'd just like to keep in mind that the Ethics Board is a public oversight function that people expect people to, citizens to oversee their government so that we all have a clear idea of what public service is and some accountability. I've listened to some of the ideas come forward since the discussion began, and I want to compliment the Assembly for opening the conversation to regular folks instead of just having it among Assembly members. But one of the complaints I hear is about somebody who might file a bogus complaint. And we really raked the definition of probable cause over the coals for many hours, and we came up with, I think, a good definition. We added the fact that it's illegal now to file a false complaint against someone. The thing that we didn't really have in there, and I'd like to propose to you, is that we discussed it, and we didn't get it into the final document, and we discussed it at some length. There's occasionally a need to get a little bit more information, which I believe would avoid the probable cause finding. If you can go to a third party under confidentiality, just like a grand jury, and get a statement from somebody, it might be able to resolve whether or not probable cause should happen. At the present time, if it's a gray area and it looks like there's something there and it meets all the other tests, the only way that you can have a real investigation is to find probable cause. And so if there's some adjustment to be made, that's where I believe it does or need to be. I think any ethics board will try to do whatever it is that you come up with to the best of their ability to be fair. And I hope that you will ask their opinion as well. You saw at the last meeting how long it can take, and I appreciate the Assembly really opening up to try and do this right, and I hope that you do. I'm willing to help any of you work with this as long as you want to work with it. You do have the option to send it back to the Ethics Board for more work with a list of your concerns, and they can send it back with a reason. So I want to thank you for your work. I hope you come out with a good product, and I think that we all want something we can be proud of. Thank you.
You. Anybody else?
Meg.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Mayor. Assembly persons, Madam Clerk. Due process is close to my heart.
Please state your name for the record.
And that's William F. Tull.
Just for the record, we all know who you are.
Due process, and I'm concerned a little bit with the hearing officer being off, also the person who's going to determine probable cause and also accepts evidence and rules on that evidence at the hearing. Now, this is not a court of criminal jurisdiction, But we're using due process here improperly. I think that if we could take another look at how you have posited the hearing officer chairman and the person, that same person, ruling on probable cause, I think will make a huge step toward having fairness that no one can find fault with. A reasonable person won't be able to find fault with, and will be transparent. I think to arrive at that goal, we will need some more time, and I suggest that if this matter could be postponed for just a short period of time for better definitions, both as to that hearing officer and as to other matters, other definitions, I think we'd all be better off. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing and bring it back to the table. Mr. Arben, is this on the table, Madam Chair?
It is. There's already been amendments.
Okay, Mr. Arben.
Well, thank you, Mr. Merck. You know, consistent with my comments when we had this at the table last time, I looked forward to speaking with Mr. Seitz and had an opportunity to do that last night. It was an engaging hour-and-a-half discussion late into the evening. And, you know, he raised some interesting points, and to include, I think, several that was a pretty engaging discussion. And I think that what came out of that for me was, this is not ready. This is not ready for prime time. And I didn't think it was, frankly, before the discussion. I have serious issues, and it was consistent too with the comments from the mayor. I thought Ms. Rossnell maybe had tapped into my discussion with Mr. Seitz, because I too have problems that personal interest is not defined. Mm-hmm. Financial interest, we spent an hour and a half talking about financial interest last time this was at the table. Maybe one of the most simple components of determining if it's a $50 question or a $500 question or a $5,000. And you know what? We really didn't arrive at a conclusion, even on that. There was general idea that maybe $1,000 is the number, but it's a footnote for the attorney to bring back to us later. There was no conclusion. Right, it was a work session, but the hearing officer's powers, conflict of interest, is the question that the entire document asks or tries to put some parameters around whereby one can effectively navigate and not find themselves in trouble and have some framework to know what the general expectations are. That's the document as a whole. But I think it is possible to put framework around what does conflict of interest mean. Is it you're doing something for your specific personal financial gain? I think people would say, yeah. Then what is personal interest? What is personal gain? What is financial interest? What is financial gain? And probable cause by the third party, that was part of the discussion that was enlightening for me last night, in that there, if we have a framework and the process, the ethics board and the hearing officer, whatever that hearing officer's power may or may not be, maybe they find themselves up against the wall and the old, if we could just ask this one person this one question, it would really resolve. And we could have a definitive platform that there is probable cause or there's not. Because I would imagine, not having been through this process, thankfully, that in order to arrive at probable cause, as the board, they would surely like that to be a solid footing that they're on. So I would ask that we send this back to the Board of Ethics, and we ask for determination on what is, in their opinion, financial interest. We have some general framework, but they didn't give us the answer. What is personal interest? I'd like that to be defined. And I would like them to propose some language change to the code that allows the Board of Ethics and the hearing officer the path to be able to ask a third party a question if they need to be asked, in if it needs to be asked, with the, you know, with the shutters still closed and protection of all parties involved not having the ability to disclose that to anybody else. So that's my motion.
Okay.
To send it back and ask for definitions for these to be defined in code.
But Madam Clerk, did you get those specific issues?
I didn't, Mr. Mayor, but I definitely can re-listen to the audio. But
yeah,
we do need a specific date that it would be coming back here. And I would, if you're, because the clerk's office does work with the Board of Ethics, it does take time to put together, so I'd request it to be more than a month in the recall.
Like
and it might take a number of meetings for them to.
Assemblymember Bettini, we're working on a motion. There's
not. Did Jack make the motion?
He did.
I was going to suggest that we have a little more discussion before we have the motion, in that some of the concerns that I heard last time that I'm not clear on is how to keep the ethics violation within that body of the board or the hearing officer so that somebody's reputation isn't, you know, ruined for whatever reason that there isn't proper cause. And so I don't know if that's one of the things that Mr. Arvin had discussion on or not. And if it is, I'd like to hear the reasons for keeping that private and what the suggestions might be. I know that
you're there.
Okay, well, there is a motion on the floor, so we're speaking to that. Assemblymember Bettini asked if and why, or I'm assuming what the guarantees would be that there is confidentiality up to the point of a probable cause ruling. That's what you were asking?
Yeah.
Okay. That could certainly be amended in. Assemblymember Arvin?
Mr. Mayor, I didn't mean to suggest this is all. I would imagine that other members have other items they would like planning or the the ethics board to consider, and you know, I'm open to amendments, and we can amend it and go around the table and do that and add the list and make the list. I'm not opposed to that at all.
Once it's postponed, can we do that according to ethics?
Well, we're building a motion to send with this legislation back to the ethics board, so. Is there any objection to Assemblymember Bettini's amendment to the motion? I don't see anything there that would be objection. Her motion was to guarantee confidentiality in the process up to the point of probable cause being determined. There's no objection to that. Okay, that's now part of the main motion. Assemblymember Ewing, you were next.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to say I appreciate public speaking tonight. This does need further review. And Mr. Tall, thank you for coming tonight. And Mr. Arvin, I think you're right on the money. To try to plow through this tonight, I think is a disservice to the public, and I think that we need to let the comments that were submitted and define these substantive manner before proceeding. And I'll probably make a motion to postpone this until such time those definitions have been defined.
Now, Assemblymember Ewing, the motion is to, I think, remand back to the Board of Ethics to come back, and they're working on a date now, so...
I need to get rid of that.
Yeah, you won't need to postpone. Assemblymember Keogh.
I'm fine with the... sending this back to the Ethics Board for their review. We've been dealing with this intermittently since February, so that's fine with me. We've essentially had the same code since 1984, so it's worked for whatever, been 27 years, so we're okay with that. What I would like to do, if on the presumption that that is what we do, remanding it back to the Ethics Board, is...
It's referring it back.
Referring it. Remanding, referring, it's an R word. So, but I prepared seven different amendments this evening, so I will toss these amendments. Some are very minor with punctuation corrections. Others include a conflict of interest definition. But I will assemble these and pack them off, send them off for their consideration as well. Some are substantive, some are relative.
The motion did include conflict of interest definition, didn't it? Yeah.
Mr. Mayor, it did. And again, I think that that's probably the whole document. That's the goal. But I would encourage Mr. Keogh to make a secondary amendment, and we can send specific requests to the Ethics Board and have it in the form of the main motion. Ask or request them to consider the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you have anything specific, throw it out, and then at least the board knows it's coming from the assembly and not from one assembly person. Can we get a date on this so we may nail this down?
So, to get advice from the clerk, it appears as though 1/17/2012 bring back as a special meeting, and then 2/7/12 and 2/21/12, we could postpone if we're not done the action on 1/17. I was actually thinking sometime in December, but I'll follow the first week and then we'll look at what you said on the document coming forward.
Okay. The motion is to have this back from the Ethics Board for the assembly to have a special meeting on January 17th with introduction and public hearing on February 7th, or it would be on finished business then. Okay. So there'd be a public hearing at the special meeting. Those are continuing.
The public hearing's been closed. The assembly hasn't moved to postpone it for another public hearing. This would be going under unfinished business. It wouldn't mean that people couldn't speak to it under audience participation under other meetings.
Okay.
But I don't. As of right now, I haven't heard it as stated intent to continue the public hearing.
It doesn't mean that we couldn't set another public
That's
hearing.
That's true. That is very true.
Yeah. Okay. Is that clear? January 17th. I've lost track of who's next. Assemblymember Woods.
I'd like to propose that the Ethics Committee be warn the Assembly of their meeting so that we can send them things that we think should be looked at or changes to be made and they would consider them.
Would that be ethical?
I hope so. No, just that. And I see a lot of definition changes that I agree with. And some things that are still being overlooked.
Okay. I saw another hand somewhere. Assemblymember Colbert.
I guess I'm a little concerned that determining the probable cause that, you know, we're going to ask third-party questions. We start a little mini-trial, if you will, right off the get-go. And then does the accused have an opportunity to cross-examine that third-party witness? And so, you know, here we go. We might have to look at that very closely. I think what we've got is a good start. You know, one legal mind to do an analysis before anything goes forward. But I just hope we don't recreate the goat rope we already have with the third-party issue coming up. So I have no problem with putting this down the road. What were our recommendations at the work session? I'm looking through here and I don't see those. That's one of my questions.
I think Assemblymember Keel wants to speak to that.
Yeah, there are two. One was moving the definition of financial interest as it was defined to a different place, to move it forward to the definition part of the code. And the other was a simple language addition regarding the declaration of a personal interest. It's around pages 454 and page 54 respectively. And these were outlined by the borough attorney and sent to us here a week or so ago.
Assemblymember Auburn.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Those were changes.
Correct.
But we do have a list of items on a tickler file from the attorney of, I think, several other items that there was general consensus over, but we couldn't take action on them because
right.
of the work session. Maybe that's the list that we pulled it out.
So we have to put those in there.
Assemblymember Strauss, yes, Assemblymember Strauss. Mr. Attorney.
I believe those amendments were made on August 16th, which is the notes by the clerk on the current draft.
Mm-hmm.
I worked those into the draft, sent them to the clerk. After that, then we just had the most recent work session, of which there were three directions to me. One was to write through amendments, and the third was to send everybody definitions from Anchorage and Fairbank. An email that I sent out. So all of the prior amendments were captured and worked in, and they're indicated. Most of them are indicated by notes from the arrows, but if you look, there's bold and underlined all through this draft. Those are all additions that were added in since the draft showed up.
And this is
so
all.
Most of those were already worked in.
This is all what would be going back to the ethics.
Mr. Mayor?
Uh-huh.
So, Mr. Strauss, what about the $1,000 question of financial interest?
That was drafted for tonight, should you wish to take it up and move an amendment to this draft.
Is that in our package here? What else did you have?
From the member Keo, you've been...
I'll check the IM.
Waiting on this.
I just spent the day following through this, but I don't think the $1,000 dollar amount was specifically referenced in here. I think the intent of the assembly at our last workshop was to, we gave the attorney direction to change the placement of the financial interest with the dollar amount to place it in a different part in the code, and then I think it was the intent to amend that dollar amount from $200 to some other amount. But there wasn't any specific language. I don't think $1,000 in here.
Well, it should be somewhere because it did come out of our workstation.
Yeah, I pulled it up here. I'll print up a bunch more, 15 more copies.
Well, the question is that going to be included in what we send back to the ethics board or not?
That's up to you.
At this point,
because last time was a work session, those two amendments were not worked into the draft.
Okay.
They were prepared if you want to move them in tonight.
Right.
But last time, I was just given kind of the general direction, we'll prepare them, we'll bring them forward and you know, discuss them.
Okay.
I just printed off a bunch. They should be sitting upstairs on my printer if you want, so I can run up and go grab them.
Assemblymember Halter, did you come on board? This may be Assemblymember Ewing. Assemblymember Bettini.
I'd like to request that we have like a 10-minute break where we get these amendments from the attorney so that we can look over the work that we did at the last work session.
Okay, let's take 10 minutes.